Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of our game and where we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Miss Gloria, who's going to be sharing her story and her sister's story of survival. I need to put out today, you will need to understand, this is a trigger and trauma warning. Make sure that you remove the kids out of the room. Make sure that you are ready to hear some grown folks talk, and make sure you're ready to deal with what we're going to talk about today. Today, we are talking about the topic of domestic violence, all sides, the dating process, how it starts, and when it's time to go. I would like to, again, welcome Miss Gloria.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Tell us, what's your story?
So my story, I am a survivor of domestic violence or domestic abuse. I was in a marriage for 18 years. Now, the whole 18 years was not bad. It was predominantly the last 7 years of my marriage where it started with the verbal abuse. And then from the verbal abuse, it went to just a simple push, and then from a simple push to physical violence. And from that point, things just started getting worse and worse. And so this is going to be my story. So I'm going to share this part with you all.
So I want to take a trip back, you know, because when people think of domestic violence, they think it starts off like that from the beginning. But I want to go back to the dating stage. Take me to the dating stage. How did you and this person meet?
We actually went to school together, and then later in life we started working together. We worked at the same place, we had the same employment. Then from there we kind of connected, and everything worked out fine. He was really funny, great personality. Okay. So that was one of the things that drew me in. And then an excellent provider. So that I won't take from him. He was an excellent provider. So that's another thing that kind of draws you in, you know, being a provider and having a great personality.
So interesting, because, you know, they talk about, for me, when I work, and for those who know me, I do mental health. One of the main things we talk about is not getting caught up with the personality, because most times abusers are what we call the silver tongue. They don't know how to make you laugh. They know how to make you feel good. They know how to make you have all these wonderful moments. But on the other side of those wonderful moments can be so much more. And I love how you talked about he had a good personality, but he also knew how to make me feel secure in stability of being able to provide. That's a thing people don't realize. So as y'all are dating, kind of give me an idea of one of these moments, or one of these, like, you know, wonderful whirlwind date moments.
If I spoke about something that I wanted, he always got it for me. So if I said I wanted a bicycle that had a motor with it, he was going to go out and make sure that I got everything that I wanted. So that was a drawing point. That was to draw me in,
He was the attentive guy that made sure if you all were walking down the street and you said, oh, I like this, he ended up getting you that.
Correct.
Oh, okay. All right. That's the one of some of my friends who like to be like, girl, he's so attentive. You better know what you're being attentive
yes.
to.
Yes. Yes. So,
as this went on, he's buying things, he's making you feel wonderful, as he should, and as every man should. And then we're in the process of getting married. Were there any signs, were there any signs before you got to the point of the engagement?
No, not before, but soon after I got married, some things came in about his previous marriage and domestic abuse. So
this wasn't his first marriage?
Correct.
Okay. Had you all had the conversation about the previous marriage before?
The previous marriage, yes, we did, but never the domestic abuse.
Whoa. Okay. So now I got to add this to my list now. I haven't been
married. Yes.
Add this to my list. Do you have a history of? So because my questionnaire is, you know, hey, are you with somebody? Do they think they with you? Are you gay or homosexual or bisexual? And if not, do they believe you are? So now I need to add, Do you have a history of mental health that you, or unkept mental health that you're not dealing with? And also, do you have a history of domestic violence? Because that's an important question. I think a lot of times we're so caught up in the guys or who you choose to date, and all of a sudden, we don't ask a lot of key questions.
Correct.
So I thank you. You gave me some more to add to my list over him. Okay, keep going.
Yes, because see, now we only dated for 6 months before we got married. So there's a red flag. We got to learn how to really date somebody and get to know them before we actually marry them. Okay. And that was my fault. So okay. You think you know them because you went to school with them, but then, you know, we all grow up and we all, you know, we're adults now. So we got to learn that person all over again.
What are some of the things that you would ask now, besides the history of domestic violence, what would be a part of that learning process for you? Now that you look back all this time later, what else would be in that questionnaire or in those conversations?
Maybe, what is it that triggers you? What's a trigger point for you, you know, with your mate? I'm asking all kinds of questions. How was your family background? Did your mom and dad get along? Did they argue? Did they fight? Was there domestic abuse in the home? You have to ask all of that stuff.
Okay. I think so many times we just look at the person and don't really remember that, yes, you're dating a combination of their past experiences and where they are now.
Right.
I know for me, just in my dating experiences, you know, we're just like, well, I love this person. Oh, here's one of my favorite ones that I keep hearing people say to me. I'm not marrying his family. I'm marrying him. Ding dong boo, you marrying all of them. Because
all of them, all them different spirits.
Yeah, all of them coming with you. And depending on what was in that house, you get all of that too.
Yes.
So here we are. We've been married now. When did this start? What were some of the starting point things that you've seen?
Okay, so I left and I went off to Iraq and I came back. And I think, and I'm more than sure, no, I'm positive, there was some type of steroid use.
Okay.
So, and I know it's factual because I saw it for myself. So once the steroid use started, you know, going on for a certain amount of time, then the temper started flaring over small, minute little things. It's something as small as leaving a dish on the table or leaving a shoe in the floor. Something really small would just trigger him off.
So wait a minute. You brought up two things, because I'm going to rewind the tape a little bit, because I know for so many times people always think of domestic violence as something that, you know, weak women, that's the crap I've heard. Weak women have gotten caught up in domestic violence. And I want people to know that is a true myth. I don't believe it is a crock of bull. And in this, you said you went off to Iraq. Iraq is not a pleasure cruise. So what were you doing?
Right, right.
Yeah. What were you doing over in Iraq?
So I served 15 years.
Okay, so you were serving in the military.
Yes. And so no, it's not a weak woman's issue. That's something that's misinterpreted. It's not a weak woman's issue. And it's not even just a woman's issue, because there's men that actually, you know, it's not a man-woman domestic abuse. It's not just women. There's men also that's abused as well.
Here's the sad statistic in that. There are more men within the last 5 years being abused than being reported.
Yes.
And I'm just so grateful that you shed a little bit more light that, yes, this is not just a woman thing. This is not just men. It's happening. It's a human thing. And it's a problem that needs to be addressed head on.
Right.
You talked about your time in the serving, and you talked about, and I'm so glad you said it, because I'm so sick of hearing it's a weak woman thing. No, it's not.
Nope.
It's thing. And it's honestly, it's somebody else's trauma that's being brought on to somebody else's, bringing trauma to somebody else. So along with that, then you started talking about steroid use.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people always talk about, well, you know, this, that is not a really bad drug, or this, that, or, you know, they just drunk a little bit, and that was a little weird. For you, were you aware of this use before it got kicked off?
I was not, because I did 15 months over there. And I know, like, when I got back, he had gained a lot of muscle weight.
Right.
Because now when we got married, he was small. Maybe, I'm going to say a 32, 34. Okay. So when I got back, it was like muscle, lots of muscle. So I think there's one particular day when I went into the restroom, I saw him using the steroid. Wow. So that was kind of like a trigger point. And so I'm like, so what is this? You know, oh, well, my doctor gave this to me for an injury or something, some lie. But I went on the computer because he says I'm nosy. And I'm looking up at, you know, what's on the bottle. And then I find out what it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
So not only are you here with this person who you pledged life and love to, but now they're lying to you.
Correct.
And that is a part of the abusive cycle. Because mm-hmm. when they do the hide, they're going to do the hide. So at this point, you literally, in my eyes, you have to become a private investigator in your home to find out what's going on with this person, with this substance they're taking.
Yes.
Noticing these changes in the behavior, as you said, the triggers for him were little things like a dish in the sink or a shoe on the floor, which for somebody else in the world wouldn't be a trigger.
Right.
And how did this progress? So now you're seeing these triggers come up with the shoe or a dish. Was there a night that it really, really got bad?
So there would be days where it started verbally and it was little things that he would say. And so that's why I think earlier, you know, before we started recording, I said, there's a really thin line between like just a disagreement versus mm-hmm. verbal abuse. There's a really thin line, but once that verbal part starts to threaten you, harm you, make you lose self-esteem, make you lose your value and your worth, that becomes abuse.
So I want to go a little deeper, and I want you to add in a couple too, because I know I've heard people say it started off with, oh, you know, it used to be an outfit they would wear all the time. All of a sudden that outfit didn't look right. Or it was too short. The skirt was too short. I used to love how my legs look. Now you don't like them. Or now you're saying stuff that's really affecting me and you know it's affecting me. And you're doing it on a more and a more basis. What was some of just some of the lines your person would say?
It's called control. Control is the very first stage of domestic abuse.
Yes.
It starts with control because now they want to control what you wear,
uh-huh.
who you're with, where you're going, how long you're going to be there, who you're on the phone with, not even wanting you to talk to your family.
So you
keeping you isolated.
Going to isolation.
Okay. Yes.
From control now to isolation.
Mm-hmm.
I say all the time, it's important to have somebody. And like you said at the beginning, it was no problem. Things had changed.
Right.
And all of a sudden now, isolation. We don't do this. What's going on? What's happening? I really want to know what's going good with this. So then this isolation started. How did that work and kind of play on you mentally? Because I can imagine having this person that you've been with for quite some time and all of a sudden it seemed to be a rapid change with the behaviors. All of a sudden it started with control, isolation. How did you deal with that mentally?
Mentally, it broke me down. It made me feel like I was not worth anything because now I'm in this place. And like I said, it's not a weak person. You're thinking, okay, what is it that I'm doing wrong? You know, once you love me and now it's this, you know, I'm ugly, I'm this or I'm that, I'm fat or I'm this or I'm that. Once upon a time, you love everything about me, right? Mm-hmm. So now everything that you once loved about me, it's a problem now. So now what he's doing is tearing down my self-esteem. Then he's tearing down my worth and my value. And that's called, it's to isolate you. So they'll have you thinking, well, nobody else is going to want me if I look like this to him who I'm married to.
So that's
the isolation process. They want you to feel like nobody else is going to want you. So now you got to stay with me because I'm your husband. So now if I tell you you can't go this place or I'm not going to buy you this thing, then you're going to stay and you're going to be isolated and just, I'm going to be in control of everything. So, you know, that's how that took place.
So I'm going to go a step further because it sounds like we started with the control. It went from the control to the isolation. And this control and isolation stage, these two stages are the most crucial because these are literally your grooming stages.
Yep.
get you to the point of somebody literally putting their hands on you. Because at the beginning, not you're changing up my style of clothes. Maybe you're changing up my hair, because I've seen people do that. I've seen people get to the point, all of a sudden, the type of vehicle, because now that's too flashy for you. So now if you were not a minivan type of car person, now all of a sudden we're trying to stick you in a minivan because we know that's not your style. Or we're doing something that's going to pull you away from your authentic you, the you that you know you are. And then you're isolating me, you're saying these type of comments and stuff. And I've even heard people say, you know, people will come up and say, oh, I'm so glad that you didn't have the thought of, you know, putting that dryer in the water with you when you were showering. What? So now you're planting seeds.
Right.
Moving me towards further down this grooming process. So for you, what happened after this control and intimidation, and isolation, not intimidation, started?
So after that, that's when the physical abuse started coming in. Maybe a push or slap. And then it escalated to the dislocated shoulders or the bruised elbows or the bruise, the marks and scars on your back and the busted lips, all of that. So, and then what you do, and I always tell people, be aware, silence is the loudest cry for domestic violence, because you try to hide all of that from your family, from your kids, from your friends, from your coworkers. You have to speak out about it. But because you're so afraid, because now you're saying, I got 18 years invested into this marriage. I don't want to be deemed or be labeled as a loser or be labeled as a failure in a relationship. But it goes deeper than that. We got to learn how to understand our worth and our value and who we are, whose we are. And that's going to teach us how to live. Because we got to learn how to live to be free.
So what I love, not that you've had this experience, but I love how you gave me a power statement. And I'm going to tell you right now, I love that. You gave me the power statement where that silence is the loudest cry for help. And I think for so many people, we just assume, especially with this day of social media and on the gram and all this, and everybody want to be couples goals and all of that. Everybody is so big to say, but I want to be like them. And you see just a snapshot of a moment.
Yep.
You don't know what happens behind those locked doors, those drawn curtains. You have no clue. And for so many people, it's the push to be that perfect look and not be yourself.
So and that's so funny you said that. I had a friend and she said, oh, when I get married, I want my husband to be just, no, baby, no, you don't. Don't say that. Like, I was like, no, don't say that. And I, at that time, I wasn't speaking out about the things that were going on behind the scenes. So I was like, no, you know, you don't look at it from the outside. You just don't base your relationship off of what you see. Because when I walk outside of my house, you don't understand what I have to go through behind closed doors.
Yeah. And that's one thing I've always said, and it's very funny to me because I hear people say that all the time. I have a coworker right now. She just got engaged. I'm extremely happy for her because she's going through quite a bit to get here. And I heard her one day over telling one of the other young ladies, oh, I want to be just like so-and-so and so. And I said, okay. And again, I probably was wrong because I was butting my nose in. Let me just put it out there. I just put it all in her conversation. But I'm like, listen, let me ask you a question. Do you know what goes on behind these people's doors when they're not on camera? When it's not time to go ready, set, action, smile, do you know what happens? Because we see so much of that in this society now. And even back in the day with our grandparents and such, we saw so much of that putting on the good look
for
everybody and making sure that when I walked out of my house, you always saw the best. We never talked about that. And, you know, for me, I have a thing about that. I'm all about, you know what, let me tell you what's really happening because you don't know. I ain't got to tell you everything, but I need to tell you what's going to help me walk outside this door today, tomorrow or today, and be whole and heal. So I'm so happy that you share that part about the silence, because for so many of us, we grew up, at least I'm going to speak for Patrice, growing up in the South and hearing this constantly, don't you tell what's going on in my house.
That's it.
Or, you know, which that to me is a tagline of trauma. You know, what stays in this house stays in this house. I was like, yep, that's the hallmark line of trauma. Yep. Because the first thing you do is we tell everybody, my house is my house. Yes, it is. But whatever goes on in here, and no matter how it affects you, you stuck.
Yeah.
And that's so true. Many of us have been, I'll speak for me, I have been held captive. It took me years to really talk about the childhood traumas because I had to break out of this norm of I can't tell what goes on in the house.
Right.
And we get into that. In the midst of this for you, were there any harvests? And when I talk about harvests in this relationship, because we've talked about what the domestic violence looks like, was there any harvests in this relationship for you? Any good things that came out of this relationship?
I survived.
That's the best.
I survived. And that's really a harvest. And so I tell people all the time, I'm like, I have to share for a long time. For a long time, I stay silent. I just started speaking out about this last year.
Wow.
It took me 7 years to learn how to love myself again, learn how to know my worth and my value and understand who I was and how valuable I was and how what I went through and made it out of was going to help the next woman to make it out alive.
Wow. That right there is powerful. And I know for me, the whole piece was, I can't tell this because I don't want someone to know what I went through.
Right.
And you hear that, you say, you know what? I had to talk about this because I made it out.
Yeah.
So many women and men choose not to speak about it because it's like, well, I should have known better. Nobody knows they walking into a situation with somebody who can't handle themselves. Yeah. Nobody has a clue with that. But what I love about your story is you talk about you as a survivor, but now let's flip the camera over to your sister a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about your sister. Share her story with us.
So I tell everybody I'm a survivor / victim. So I lost a sister to domestic violence in 2012. And so a lot of people go, well, how do you feel like you're the victim? The victim just doesn't stop with the person that lost their life because now it affects the family, the children, the community. It actually affected the community because she was really big in the community.
Yes, come on.
And so you got to, you know, again, they're looking at the outside, not knowing what's going on in the inside, because honestly, we never ever knew what was going on behind closed doors because she worked in the court system with domestic violence. She was the injunction clerk. So, and I just asked this, I was talking to my friend earlier today and I was saying, you know, it's October and I always, you know, sometimes I go in a little deep slump or sometimes, and I asked myself and I said, why did I make it out and she not make it out? And so I had to go back and I was saying, she worked in domestic violence. She worked in injunctions. So did she really think that she was in intimate danger? Maybe she really didn't think. Maybe she really didn't think she was in danger. Maybe she thought she had it up under control. And she never talked about it. She never talked about it to us.
Okay.
Whereas me, I didn't talk about it, but they know it was going on because I was calling the police.
So wait a minute. Here's the difference in your story and hers. She was silent at a point you were actually reaching out and calling.
Correct.
Wow. So let's go a little further. If you don't mind, I want you to continue sharing a little bit more about her story. Did you know the level of the abuse that she was going through?
No, we didn't know anything. Like, we had no clue. The family had no clue.
So she's still coming around family like everything is good?
Yes.
Wow. So no isolation. So, wow, this is a different face of domestic violence because, you know, everybody talks about the isolation and control, but here you have the sister who's still coming around, having a good time, being around family.
She was the life of the party. That's the thing. She was always the life of the party. So we had no clue. How I found out is I had a major surgery. When I woke up, I turned the news on. It was 6 o'clock in the morning and it was on the news. And that's how I found out she had been murdered.
Okay, wait, no. Wait, roll a tape back. Mm-hmm. When are you going to surgery and you find out something on the news?
Yeah, that's how I found out.
You got to clue us in now, because we weren't there for the news broadcast. So what did you find out?
So when I woke up and I turned the TV on, it was like one killed in a home invasion. That's what they said. One killed in a home invasion and one injured. So when I looked, I said, that's my sister's house. So I'm calling, and I'm calling my mom, and I'm not getting the answer. And I'm calling my kids, and I'm not getting the answer. And I say, something isn't right. But I couldn't get up, because I just had a major surgery. Mm-hmm. And so finally, I get in contact with somebody. And all I just hear was, you know, she had been murdered. And I'm saying, well, who murdered her? And they was like, well, he said it was a home invasion. I said, no, because everybody in the whole community like my sister, because she worked with everybody in the community. She worked with the kids. She worked in the court system. She helped everybody. So no, it wasn't a home invasion. I said, he killed my sister. And from that day, I said, he killed my sister.
Wow. So you knowing this, because I actually do believe siblings, no matter how we are, we know what we know about our siblings. Mm-hmm. And we know what will and won't happen in that regard. Was he ever brought to justice?
Yes.
What took place there?
45 years.
45 years. That's what he's currently serving?
Yes.
How was the process for you walking through this and knowing you had this gut feeling and having other people, because I know how this goes, people, when you say something they don't agree with, how did it feel to walk through the process and know and stand in this truth for you and see it come to justice?
It took a lot of prayer. I'm telling you, it took a lot of praying. It crushed me. Because at that point, when I woke up and I turned on that TV, I said then, this could be me. I have to get out of this marriage. I have to get out of this relationship that I'm in. That was the ending point at that time. This is the ending result if I stay in.
So literally her life saved your life.
Yes.
Wow. Holy moly. Okay, you know I'm blown right now, but I'm so full of joy to see that her legacy of her life not only touched you, it's touching all of us now.
Yeah.
Because this story, I don't know about anybody else, but I definitely won't forget neither one. Because this has been jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
You had to share with somebody any of this and just say to them, these are the three main pieces you need to know. What are those three main things you want everyone to know?
I want you to know that you are valuable. I want any person that's going through domestic abuse, that you're valuable, you're worth it, you're worth being loved correctly, and that love has so much to offer when you find real love, but love will never cause you hurt, harm, or danger.
Mm. Wow. You know, you gave me a power statement. You are meant to be loved correctly. Because I have to be honest, I feel, especially in the African-American community, we've been taught you can have love, but love has to be painful. Love has to be going through all of this. And that's not what love has to be.
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
Okay, y'all, listen. I'm normally getting my tears over here. She feeding me like a fat girl at the buffet. I'm telling you, feed me. Here's what I need. I need you to just give us a little bit, because I know you're doing community work. Tell us about your community work and how we can connect with you so we can support you.
Okay, so I do, I just go out and I just talk to people. I don't have anything where domestic abuse is. I just go out and I talk to people. Most of the time I can really... I'm sensitive to people. So I can really kind of, if I talk to a woman or I see a woman, I can pretty much pick up on them whether or not they're going through something in the home. So I just talk to them one-on-one or just have a general conversation with them. What I do in the community, I do have a nonprofit organization called My First Steps, and it works with pregnant teens. So my goal with the pregnant teens is to teach them how to become self-sufficient and learn how to come off the system so that they don't have to get in situations such as domestic violence or domestic abuse.
Okay.
So it teaches them how to learn, you know, it teaches them how to just not depend on the system. Come off. It's called breaking systems, cycles, and circles. That's my motto.
All right. Breaking systems, cycles, and circles. Hello. Tell somebody. I like that. So you also talked about this breaking systems and cycles. For you, have you broken these cycles for yourself? And you
I have. And it's I think they always tell me, why don't you just go out and be an advocate? No, I'm not an advocate. I am not. I'm not a counselor. I'm not an advocate. But I will talk to someone, because a lot of times people are so embarrassed. They think that I shouldn't go and seek help. Seek help. If you're going through it, you need help. You need counseling, because you're going to need to rebuild who you are. You're going to have to build yourself up again. Even me, it took me 7 years to even just step out and decide I want to go on a date. Because I had to learn how to love myself. I had to learn how to not hold this person accountable for what the last person did to me.
Mm.
So it's a process that you have to go through just to learn how to love yourself over again. But once I looked in that mirror and I love everything about me, flaws and all.
Hello now.
Telling you.
Hello now.
Something.
That's the part. I thank you so much for sharing with us today your story of trauma, tragedy, but most importantly, triumph.
Yeah.
And for me, just knowing and you sharing this story with me today and seeing how your faith was a major part of that, and along with your faith, seeking the proper connections in the community for you. Proper help, counseling and such. And I stress that, those who know I work in the field of counseling. So I stress that. I'm one of those people that always say, you can have Jesus and a therapist. It don't hurt you. It's a good thing. It's something that helps you move and grow to where you want to go. But I got to tell y'all, she got to come back. Okay, let me just tell y'all that right now. She has an open seat. Welcome to come back when we get into doing some bigger things, because I want her to come back and share more of her story, because this was just one chapter. She has a whole thing to go. And I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to it, because I know she is moving on to bigger and better. And I want us to be a part of that voyage with her. So y'all know how this goes. Thank y'all for tuning in to the Patrice Brantley Show, where we help others is the name of the game. And on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. All right, y'all have an amazing day and amazing week. I'll catch y'all next week.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.